It's time to go full speed ahead with Michael Kelly. Each week, we take you inside all the big sports stories at USF from the perspective of the man who oversees the program, Vice President of Athletics, Michael Kelly. With today's show, here's your host, Derek Sharp.
Well, we missed last week because the man's been extremely busy. And speaking of busy, we, at the end of this episode of Bull Speed Ahead, are going to talk about Michael Kelly's experience 25 years ago, being the organizer of the Final Four here in Tampa Bay, and it fits because we're here in Final Four era. And we will talk about, obviously, the end of the basketball season officially when it comes to Amir Abdur-Rahim and that great ride that the men's team went on this year. Unbelievable ride that Melanie Green of Women's Golf took to Augusta. We'll get you fired up for the spring game, track and field. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. But indeed, Michael Kelly, it has been, I think, last time we would have talked about the NIT coming up, and now it's come and gone. And I know it's not, again, the experience that everybody wanted, but I thought it was cool to get that win and then to get that last chance to play before a great home crowd.
Sure, certainly, Derek. And as Coach Abdur-Rahim had said, obviously our focus and our trajectory is to go to the NCAA tournament and to go often in the future. But the great step to have the NIT opportunity this year, for us to have a chance to go to UCF and get that win was awesome. Great turnout by our students and by our fans to go over there and make it just a really great tournament atmosphere, to be quite honest, over there. And then to kind of come back and close out one last time at home for this historic 2024 season, the winningest season in USF history in terms of number of wins, was a special, huge crowd, played a very, very good VCU team down to the end and just came up a little bit short, but that didn't really diminish the just the excitement and the pride that was instilled by this great team for the 2024 season for USF men's basketball. So thanks to Bulls Nation for coming out. Three different sellouts. One really close to a sellout
like
with this NIT game. It was a really loud crowd. I loved, in particular, just the high basketball IQ.
Bingo.
Of a crowd that everyone's been able to realize and see. And I know it all comes with having a crowd. It starts with the students having that kind of atmosphere, which what attracts people to college basketball games. But man, when we had key times we needed to stop, when key momentum moments were happening, the crowd was going crazy, and it was really cool. The other thing that was cool, Derek, was not only that atmosphere, but, you know, we had so many different season ticket holders that kept adding on, and the different Bulls fans that came to games throughout the year. Our ticket office tells us that there were so many fans at the NIT game that were, in essence, first-time buyers once we had taken care of our season ticket holders, which just shows that that whole Tampa Bay for Hoops passion is growing, that the people that love basketball were appreciative of what this team did and what they acknowledged and the atmosphere that the SoFlo Rodeo helped create. So that makes me very excited and prideful for the future, not only the respect and the admiration this team has, but the fact that, hey, we kind of captured the imagination of basketball fans throughout the Bay Area, because that was going up against some games that, you know, some NCAA games are still going on, and if you cared enough about basketball to come watch us play a good game against VCU, that was really, really cool. So I'm ecstatic about it, excited for the future, and I know Coach Abdur-Rahim and Coach Fernandez are out recruiting like crazy to build on some very good things for next year.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was actually watching the LSU-Iowa game last night. It was fantastic, and I know that the announcers did a great job, because they realized some new eyes were on them, so they were actually explaining some of the rules that are different from the men's game and the women's game, timeouts, that kind of thing, advancing the ball, because they knew they needed to. So maybe in a situation like that last game at home, you could have had, you know, the crowd having to be prompted, you know, like, let's make some noise, that kind of thing. And it's the first thing that jumped out at me, and I was so glad I got to experience it. None of that was necessary. It wasn't just the SoFlo Rodeo. It wasn't just the place looked filled and it felt filled. But the crowd didn't need any nudging. The crowd knew when the team was on defense needed to stop. And it was just this roar throughout. They knew when to be quiet as well, obviously. But I thought the basketball knowledge, like I said, didn't have to be taught. But it is there. I mean, it was fantastic to witness.
Yeah, it was very uplifting. As I said, as in essence a basketball purist at heart, you know, growing up in the D.C. area, you know, being around great basketball legends and watching the you know, the pride of the community had in going to Maryland games at the days of Cole Fieldhouse, Georgetown games at the Pinnacle at the Cap Center, and then certainly my time at the ACC and at Wake Forest, just seeing those passionate fans and that basketball IQ. And we have it, you know, I knew we did, but it's great to see the basketball community and obviously, you know, green and gold to the core Bulls fans having a chance to experience that, because we've got a core group of Bulls fans that love basketball and been with us thick and thin. But I know they're excited when they see others join in to the party and get a part of it. Because when we didn't have the crowds and we weren't having the success that we want, that's you know, they just dream of something like this. And so when you have the Les and Pam Mumas and the David Goldsteins and the Mike Charleses and the Jeff Fishmans and everyone that's been there day in and day out, and many, many others. But that's what they get excited about when they hear and see those fans, and particularly the students. That's what makes it special.
Real quick question about Mike Charles. Does he get like an extra half season ticket for his beard, or is that sort of?
It wasn't as long when I met him in 1998 when I was here the first time around.
It was pronounced then.
Which we'll talk about later, but it's I still remember coming back 5 years ago and seeing him at my press conference, and it had gotten a lot longer, and it's even gotten longer now.
So. What a great fan, both teams too. And another thing that just came to my mind, because you talk about schools that have the tradition in basketball, and I grew up Kentucky. It's my mom and dad. And some fans, not going to say who, might have just mentioned one, feel like they need every call, feel like they want to be on the referees the whole time, that kind of thing. And you get that. Again, that crowd at the Yuengling Center wasn't like that. So it's almost like it was a perfect basketball crowd, and I just thought it was awesome to watch. Now, you mentioned Jose Fernandez, and I think all of us who are fans of the women's basketball team, some that call play-by-play, got a little nervous when they saw that other school had interest in him, and frankly can't be surprised because of the job he's done. But he has confirmed that he is coming back, and I know that you're happy along with all of Bulls Nation.
Yeah, no, obviously, when you this time of year and on occasion when prominent jobs open up, you realize that the great coaches that we have here and all of our sports are going to be attractive to people. We are and certainly someone that's won as many games for our program as Jose. So obviously not surprised at all that people express interest, but we know that we've got Jose with a very strong contract that he appreciates and knows that we put a lot of support and resources into that program to be successful. And he appreciates that. He lives where he wants to live. He's built this program from scratch, and we're glad that he'll be remaining a Bull. So he's motivated and excited for the years ahead. And again, it's all about recruiting right now to get the roster set up for a successful run in 24-25. And he's putting together a hell of a schedule, too. I know there's some things that are – I don't know what's been announced yet, so bear with me. A lot of things happen every day in my office, but a lot of really cool games are coming up for next year. We already know we have the UConn opportunity next year and some things to be announced soon on the schedule. So just stay tuned for some more great things that we're learning about next year's women's basketball program.
Well, don't worry if you're listening, Jose. I'm not going to give away any of the details of our text, but he has – it's like nothing ever happened. He's definitely all Bulls all the time. But he will every now and then text me observations. One that we can share is, hey, a couple teams that were on the schedule this last year played each other in the Elite Eight for a spot in the Final Four, and a team the Bulls took to the, you know, 10-point game. It was a close game. Took to the wire. NC State is in the Final Four. But also – yeah, he's fired up about the roster as well, so we can't announce any of those names just yet. But believe me, folks, it's going to be very, very good next year. Now, I know.
Well, with that momentum in both sports, Derek, obviously, it's just we talk about it almost every episode, and I'll just keep saying it. When we're Tampa Bay's home for hoops, we've got momentum on both the women's and men's side. Hey, folks, get out there and get those tickets. Let's continue to build that basketball crowd, that basketball in our DNA, and let's support these teams and continue to have amongst the best crowds, certainly in the American, if not the country. So I encourage you to go out and get those season tickets for next year already. Get them lined up.
And another team the Bulls played in West Palm, Baylor, by the way, was also in the Sweet 16, lost to USC, which we saw was very much an outstanding number one seeded team. Another thing that people are fired up about is the spring football game. It is coming up in a couple of Saturdays. It's at Corbett Soccer Stadium. Remember, we'll have it on the radio side on Bulls Unlimited, but if you want to see the game, it's out there to be seen. You can come to Corbett Soccer Stadium, and I know that there will be more details shared even closer to the game, but what can you tell us now?
Well, we know it's starting at 2 o'clock on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, we hope, and you know, we're winding down spring ball. I went to the scrimmage last week and was really encouraged with what I saw. The athleticism, the side, the speed, obviously the togetherness keeps getting better and better. The hard coaching and the just the attention to detail that Coach Golish and his staff are putting into it are obvious to me. And I know people will be very excited to see how they perform in this final practice, which we call our spring game. So the capacity is limited in Corbett Stadium. We know that, but there's going to be keep an eye on, and information's already on gousfbulls.com. There'll be some other tickets provided on information on April the 8th on Monday. They'll kind of put out some more ways to kind of claim some of those last remaining tickets for the big game. So keep an eye out for it, be ready for it. But it'll be for those that are able to come, it'll be a fun atmosphere again, just giving us a sneak preview for what life will be like when our forever home is going to be on campus here starting in the 2027 season.
Like you said, gousfbulls.com has the free ticket link that will be provided on Monday at 10 a.m. The Fan Fest will begin at 12, so no reason not to get there early on that day. Before we move on to other sports, I wanted you to get, since you probably talk to him every day, give the fans a glimpse into what Alex Golish, you know, all that was part of his job a year ago was to instill belief and to just figure everything out. Now, can you see any sort of mindset change when it comes to him? I know he's level-headed and whatnot, but is he getting more serious, I guess, is the real question about, you know, this opportunity that awaits the Bulls in year two.
Well, I sense an excitement and a you know, greater, you know, confidence in what he knows he has now. Obviously, last year he was still getting a sense for, hey, where are we and what do we need to do? So that's the only difference I see is just knowing that we've got ways to go, but he sees the progression. But really, the greatness of Alex is he is the same every day. He's a hard driving, hard working person that's just focused and just focused as hell to try to make sure we can do everything we can to be as good as we can, as fast as we can, as he often says. So
yeah.
He's driven. He's driving his staff hard. He's driving his players hard. He's recruiting hard. Again, he's everything that we expect, and as he says, be who you say you are. That's who he is. He's working hard to bring us a champion, and to kind of have championship habits, which he stresses all the time. So he's having a great spring, enjoying what he's doing, and just trying to make us better every day to get ready for this upcoming fall.
Well, some teams have recently claimed championships as we transition into women's golf, and they continue to not just do well, they continue to win tournaments, and they wrap up their regular season this starting early next week. And someone that'll have just wrapped up quite a special event joining her team in Chattanooga will be Melanie Green, who is rising up the ranks, not just in college, but nationally in the junior ranks. And she will get a chance to compete against the best amateurs in the world, which is, if you know MG, nothing new. But what is different about this situation is where it's taking place. What an awesome situation for one of the best student athletes on campus.
I tell you what, Melanie has been such a consistent performer over her career here, and now it just she's keep rising to the top, almost just a quiet, calm confidence, because as many of our coaches say, she's earned the right to be confident because of her preparation and her experience. And so to have this opportunity in this amateur event that ultimately will have its final round played at Augusta National for the best female amateurs is just a huge opportunity. I think it's the third year of the event in this format, and we're just so proud of her, excited for her. I know that all our teammates will be there to kind of see her perform, and I know even our men are up in that area as well. I know they're trying to go over and see her perform as well. So it'll be a really cool moment for our women's golf team and our men's golf team just to kind of support her in her efforts. But please, Bulls Nation, go to gousfbulls.com, read the story that was posted this week about Melanie's opportunity there at Augusta, and just become follow her. You know, think about her, and it's just a really fun thing for her, for her family, for our program, and really for all Bulls Nation. That's just a cool, cool thing to see her continue to rise up the charts.
She's amazing, and we had a chance to talk to her and her head coach, Erica Brandon, on Friday as she was getting ready to head out of town. Basically, two rounds at another golf course outside Augusta, and whether you make the cut or not for the last round, you get to have that practice round. Everyone's guaranteed it on Augusta. So hopefully she's in the top 30 plus ties out of a 72 player field and gets to play Saturday in the final round, which is on the Golf Channel, by the way. Another championship team that is constantly smashing school records and winning events, including relay events at the Pepsi Relays in Florida on the men's side, is track and field. I know we always sprinkle in a mention of them, but it's funny because I'm actually getting set to interview a couple of the guys for our coaches show, Bullseye, and you look around the roster and it's just so many. We're not talking about junior college transfers. We're talking about big school transfers coming in and just building this roster continually, and they continue to perform. Fifth in the country in the latest outdoor track and field rankings for the men.
How about that? I mean, fifth in the country in outdoor track after, what, the first 2 weeks of the outdoor season. Just tremendous. And I know just by social media followings that not everybody in Bulls Nation follows our USF track and cross country's platforms, but I encourage you all, please go follow it today. We put a lot of it on USF Athletics, but man, you won't be able to keep up because of the different program records, the different success that they're having. So it's just so fun to watch what these folks are doing. There's obviously another home meet coming up this week that people can see them perform, all kind of getting ready for the conference meets in a couple of weeks that you can certainly watch on ESPN Plus that we want to go for. We won the indoor championship on the men's side. We'd love to win the outdoor on the men's side and the women's side if at all possible. But you're right, to go up, and we've seen the progression. And then you see, similar to like when we had that 15-game winning streak on the men's basketball side, you just see, wow, when's this going to stop? And you just see every week more records being performed. And to go up, as you said, to go to the Florida Relays last week and compete with, again, some of the very best programs in the country, and our relay teams in particular just still having dominating performances, it's really waking people up and seeing the kind of program that Coach Jenkins is putting together. So get behind this team, folks. They are fun to watch. Hope you can come out to the meet this week if you possibly can, but if not, just keep following them, get on their social platforms, and get ready to watch that conference championship meet in a couple weeks. It'll be a lot of fun and just very prideful that we should all have in this program, starting all the way back last year when we had a national champion and Romaine Beckford, and now again literally and figuratively taking that baton with our entire program and having a lot of success. And they're as you'll point out in your interviews today that you can watch on Bullseye, just great, driven, fun coaches and kids on this team that are striving to represent USF really, really well.
Not to mention a fantastic name, Goodness Aradia. And I remember Coach Jenkins telling me about him before the season started that, yeah, he's legit and he's one of the tops in the country. And that 4x100 performance is one of the best in the entire nation all year long. All right, as we bring it to a wrap, let's relive a younger Michael Kelly 25 years ago to this time period. It's the Final Four, and you weren't just a fan. You were somebody that, what, 2 days before, okay, maybe it might have been a few weeks or a month or so before, decided to take the job leading the Final Four charge here in Tampa Bay. On the decision to leave what you were doing to doing that, and how crazy is it to think back on?
Well, it kind of just dawned on me this week that it was the 25th anniversary of the Final Four here in Tampa Bay in 1999. And that's amazing how fast time flies. But that's a historic moment for the area. I mean, we're the only the only city and school to ever host the men's Final Four here in Florida because of the size of venue that Tropicana Field availed to us at the time. So that's pretty special. It also is cool that while I'm talking about this, we are obviously hosting the women's Final Four again next year, which will be really, really cool. And we've got a whole group of people, including Lee Butler, Chris Pierce, Meredith Skirba, heading out with Rob Higgins and Claire Lessinger and their squad to Cleveland this week to kind of do the future host obligations there to kind of get ready for next year. So that's a byline on that. So that's pretty exciting. But looking back to 1999, it's just incredible. And that was a really cool experience, brought thousands and thousands of people to the area. Obviously great television coverage to the Tampa Bay area to host that at Tropicana Field. And personally, it meant a lot to me because that was it was my first chance to ever move to Tampa Bay. I moved here in 1998, about 11 months in advance of that Final Four, to kind of get the community ready, work hand in hand with USF under the leadership of Paul Griffin at the time to to get that ready, and all the people in St. Pete and Tampa. And I'm always very, very grateful, not only for the opportunity, because you're right, I was probably who knows how qualified I was, but an eager 28-year-old to come down and try to help put that together. And then to have a chance to have that kind of exposure to the entire Tampa Bay area and have a chance to put something so special together meant a lot to me at that age. And obviously, you know, was a big part of my career. But I look back on it with fondness. It was special for the area. Just funny to think about the logistics that get involved in that. I mean, hey, Derek, back then, I remember we were still doing a lot of things by fax.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Bill Hancock, who was obviously now with the CFP and retiring now, but he used to run the NCAA basketball tournament at the time. And, like, he would send out by snail mail these weekly bulletins that had tips and adjustments to the manual and stuff that you were able to run. So we would all across the nation wait with bated breath to get these bulletins to make sure we were adjusting the right way. And my whole staff of five, we shared the same email address. You know, you barely had cell phones. So it was just looking back now, like, man, I can't believe it. But bottom line is just a good, cool way to, for all of us to reflect back on. It was a great moment for USF, great moment for Tampa Bay, and certainly something I look back with fondness on in terms of just kind of jumpstarting my career. And you're right, it was a blessing to come here to Tampa Bay. It's obviously become my forever home here because we like it so much. But it was, you know, we had just come out. I was leaving Wake Forest at the time. I'd been there. That was my alma mater. I'd been there for 4 years at that point in time, and had just had a chance to host the preliminary rounds of the NCAA tournament when we were hosting Dean Smith and Bobby Knight and things of that nature. When Dean Smith set the all-time victory record at the time, even at Wake Forest, we were having a lot of success. We had a skinny center guy named Tim Duncan that guided us to back-to-back ACC titles into the Elite Eight on the men's side. So there was a lot of fun things that were rolling there. But man, when Mr. Griffin offered me the chance to come down and you know, conduct the Final Four under his leadership, it meant a lot to me, and obviously it means a lot. And that's why it was cool for me to see Paul Griffin get into the USF Hall of Fame last year. So a lot of cool things. But thanks for bringing that up. Cool way to reflect. And, man, for all of us as Tampa Bay sports fans to think 25 years. It's already been 25 years since we hosted that Final Four.
A couple things. First of all, we'll put out the accompanying article, it was written 25 years ago in the Tampa Bay Times, and like I do, if you read it, you'll go, wait a second, his cell phone only rings twice. He had a cell phone back then. Not everybody did. And then
I remember us running out Blackberries, if that's a thing still. I mean, that's how we all communicated during the week of the event.
Wow.
That was like a novel. Wow, you can text people basically by getting information to them.
Wow, and then hopefully you get more than 4 hours of sleep these days. But I understand why you only were getting it back then. Now that I realize what you're in charge of. And real quick, you know, you mentioned the size of the facility being the only one that at that time and maybe now still can host a Final Four type event. Has that always been the case? Because you really look at it, there's these massive football stadiums, in essence, that now host the Final Four. What's the minimum size for an arena? Because it always seems like it, on the men's side, isn't anyway gone to these bigger building facilities.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And things changed around that time because right before that, they were still, I can't remember the last time it was conducted in a regular size arena for the men's Final Four. Probably the Meadowlands around that time, I think, hosted it late 90s, if I'm not mistaken. And then they started the trend of going to bigger stadiums. Now, at that time, I think we hosted about 40,000 inside of Tropicana Field. Yeah. And for people's perspective now that go to Rays games now, what we did was you put the court basically that ran from home plate to first base, and then we brought in bleachers that kind of surrounded the court to make it work. So that, and then we had all the media space behind the grandstands is like where all the, you know, media workrooms were and all that kind of stuff out, literally in the outfield basically is how we kind of made that work. But since that point in time, and I forget what year it changed, but now, Derek, I think you need as much as 60 or 70,000, because it's basically, they put the court in the middle of a football stadium and it kind of builds out a specialized bleacher system from there. So unfortunately, we still haven't been eligible for that since then, mainly because of the capacity issues and not issues, but capacity demands. And then, you know, I was even asking Rob Higgins about it the other day, like, hey, when since we know the Tropicana Field's going through a and the whole area is going to have a redevelopment in the next 3 to 5 years in downtown St. Pete, would that be possible again? And I still think it's not big. You know, the next facility is going to be, again, 30,000 to 40,000 or something like that. So anyways, that's why it's probably not going to ever come back, only because, hey, we only got about half the capacity they currently sell right now, because they'll sell 70,000 plus or at least 60,000 plus in State Farm Stadium out in Glendale this weekend coming up. But we are able to, as I mentioned, able to host the women's tournament, which does stay in more traditional arenas. And so at Amalie, we can have somewhere in the 18 to 20,000 range, which is usually record setting. And that's why we've been able to get the women's Final Four repeatedly and are proud to host in conjunction with the Tampa Bay Sports Commission next April.
Well, in a way, it's a relief that you said 60 is a minimum now, because that takes all the pressure off of maybe putting a roof on the new on-campus stadium. Just kidding. Just kidding. Hey, we'll be hosting plenty more events. Baseball and softball still going on, so we'll see Michael around. And I know basketball is over, and again, we kind of moved on from that, but with the excitement of spring football and then the actual spring sports, still many opportunities to watch the Bulls all over the place.
Absolutely. Bulls stuff going on all the time. Make sure you keep following our social platforms and GoUSFBulls.com. And as always, just appreciate everything that Bulls Nation does for us day in and day out. Our coaches and our student athletes are grateful, as am I. So thanks for all you do, and go Bulls.